Back to the Educated Patient Podcast. I am your host, Mike DeMarco, and today we are joined by Dr. Mark Leekhoff and his father, David, who is also a former doctor of dentistry. Dr. Leekhoff, thank you for joining us today in this conversation around MS. I'm very excited to jump into this specifically because we're not just here from the provider perspective, but we also have your father who's a patient. Which I think will create a unique dialogue as we go here. So just to kick us off, would love to hear about your background, where you're currently practicing as a doctor, and anything else that's relevant just to frame out today's discussion.
Absolutely. So my name is Mark Leekhoff, and I'm currently the site director of the Atlantic Medical Group Multiple Sclerosis Comprehensive Care Center in Bridgewater, New Jersey. And I've been in practice for a little bit over 5 years. And, you know, I became a multiple sclerosis specialist because I was really interested in neurology from a young age. And then when my father was diagnosed around 2005, I really got interested in multiple sclerosis and really all about the intricacies of the diagnosis. What were the current disease-modifying therapies at the time, just because I love pharmacology. And then I realized, you know, when I went into, you know, med school and residency and fellowship, it really cemented my interest in neurology. And I knew from the get-go that I wanted to be an MS specialist and help to treat and cure MS.
And David, take us back to your time as a dentist and I guess just paint a little bit of a picture here of how that timeline rolled out for you when you first started to become aware that MS was part of your life story and how it led to where you are now, which is ultimately retired. And also, I don't know if the right word is remission, but you've been somewhat symptom free for some time now. So I'd love to hear more about that.
Well, I guess my first symptoms came about 30 years ago, with the first issue being fatigue, being tired all the time, and that was certainly wasn't a big help in my practice. But I went through it, and then as time went on, I had let me recoup my thought. I was having issues with walking. I developed a slight limp, and I was working. I went to the doctor because as I was jogging and all of a sudden I couldn't lift my legs up on the sidewalk from the street. I needed my hand to pull my leg up. So I went to my GP and we talked about it, and he thought it was due to medication that I was taking, and that if I stopped the medication, it would go away, and it went away. But about a little over 20 years ago, I developed a numbness in my left side of my tongue. I find it odd that a dentist would have that symptom. It's similar to getting dental treatment and getting anesthesia on the lower left side of one's mouth, where my tongue was numb. And I said, this wasn't right. I went to my I was numb for a couple of weeks, and I went to my physician, and, you know, we discussed it, and I said to him, you know, I may have MS. What do you think? He says, well, and he answered me back. He says, I hope you had a little stroke rather than MS, because MS is worse. And it turned out that I went to the neurologist, and I had a spinal tap, and that secured the diagnosis of having MS.
Dr. Leekhoff, 30 years ago, when your father was first diagnosed, walk me through kind of that shock of that may have come to be within your own personal life or your family, and what a diagnosis meant for your family at that time. I mean, especially 30 years ago, I imagine MS was even less discovered in terms of treatments and awareness and things. So I'm really curious, before you were a doctor, that the impact that that diagnosis had on you and your family.
Sure. I remember that day almost like it was yesterday. My dad was walking, and my mom, said to my sister and I, we need to have a serious talk with her, have a round table discussion. And she said that, your father's okay, but he was recently diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And I'm thinking, I hear the word sclerosis, everything else has went there. I'm like, wait a minute, it's just the same thing as ALS, because of sclerosis. And I'm like, getting all scared. And my mom reassured me that they were two very distinct diagnoses. And obviously I didn't know what the outcome would be, but the very first question is, how is my dad going to do? Is he going to get worse? Is he going to end up in a wheelchair? Is he going to need to be on treatment? And what kind of treatment would he be on? And obviously there was a lot of tears going around that room. And that's when I started doing research. I think Google was probably in its infancy, so I can't quite say if I was Googling it, but I was definitely doing my research. And right at that time, multiple sclerosis didn't have that many treatments. We call them now the crab treatments, where we had Copaxone, Avonex, Rebif, Betaseron, and those were kind of the mainstay of treatments. And nowadays, when we look back, these were our platform therapies, which nowadays tend not to be the most effective treatments. But back then, those were the most effective and the only treatments we had back then.
I can't imagine there's many docs that have your firsthand experience navigating this with a loved one so close to you, such as your father. And for someone that's listening, that's experiencing themselves or a family member being diagnosed with MS for the first time, just hearing your experience firsthand and being in a position now to be able to help them navigate that, what are some ways that you've helped families navigate a diagnosis for the first time and maybe even help them understand MS in an even simpler way than having the research like you did back then?
Absolutely. I've gotten a range of emotion from shock, angry, they expect the diagnosis, or they don't even believe in the diagnosis and they feel like there's nothing wrong with them. But I start, reading them, seeing them as a person. And then I also introduce myself that I'm not just an MS doctor, but I'm the son of a father who also has MS. And that really enables me to really connect with the patient, and I really give them, my perspective. And I also reassure them that, yes, we've heard the stories that back in the 80s and 90s, we really didn't have anything. And the very first question is, the patients always say, will I be in a wheelchair? And, just because people in the 80s and 90s, because a good majority of those patients would break through those initial treatments that I previously discussed. And, and they would end up in wheelchairs. And as a matter of fact, back in the 90s, when they came out with the data that over 50% of people will need some form of assistive device, before the before 10 years or through with their diagnosis, it becomes very it becomes thought in everybody's mind that MS is a disease that leads to disability. But I'm really glad to say that's no longer the case, because we have so many effective therapies that we didn't have 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And because we have so much amazing effective treatment, we can actually treat them from the very onset. And we're seeing that people do not end up in wheelchairs or progress at all. And now MS is thought as a condition that is a lifestyle disease rather than a disease that leads to disability. And so I've always said to my patients, yes, it's not fortunate that you have a diagnosis of MS, but if you had to have MS, this is the time to have it, not 10, not 15, not 20 years ago, because we have so many treatments that could really really nip MS in the bud. So
Is there a typical age that, or age bandwidth or range that people typically get discovered with MS for the first time, or is it all over the board?
it is all over the place, but if you're going to look at a bell curve, you're going to look about between 20 to 45. It's going to be the most common time where they pick it up. But you'll have people that are diagnosed much earlier, and I've seen pediatric MS. I don't personally treat them, but I've heard of them. But I've had people who are 17, 18 years old, and they come in with pretty aggressive MS, and then you run the gamut to people that are getting their MRIs for headache for some other reason, and they never knew that they have MS all this time, and they're being diagnosed at the age of 60, 70, even 80, but that's not very common.
Got it. How old were you when your dad was diagnosed, if you don't mind me asking?
Sure, I was probably 24, so I was probably about 20 years old. And of course, the first question is, I thought to myself, oh, because my dad has MS, does that mean I'm going to get MS? And MS is not really thought to be a genetic condition in the classic sense, not like, oh, if your father has it, you have 50% chance you're going to have MS. But the numbers, if one of your loved ones, especially a mother or father, has MS, you're about 5 to 10% likely to get it. That number kind of doubles up if you have both parents that have MS, which is pretty atypical. But actually, know people that had MS before they met each other before they had MS, and they both somehow got MS. And then if you had an identical twin, that identical twin would only be 20 to 30% likely to have MS rather than 100%.
David, when you were first diagnosed, I know it was some time ago, but can you remember some of the initial thoughts that were running through your head, specifically as a family leader? And for many years you were a practicing dentist, and I imagine leading your family, and then boom, you're hit with this diagnosis for the first time. Was that a shock for you? Like, did that impact the way that you started to show up for your family to still be a leader for them?
I wasn't shocked, but I was really concerned that I could still maintain and be a provider. And what I've learned from MS is that each case is unique. If you have diabetes, either you have a high sugar level, and it's treated in one way. MS seems to be so have so much variance that you can't dictate what another person has to say, to think that you will have the same outcome. But yes, I used to tell my kids, I say, behave and be nice, because one morning I could wake up and not be able to walk or not be able to see, since those are things that happen with MS patients from what I've heard. And I would tell you the number one thing that I've learned how to do is to reduce stress, because I do believe that worrying about things and stressing about your condition will make your condition worse. And one needs to find an inner peace and say, I have it, I'm going to deal with it. And that's what, as a patient, that's what I can recommend for other people who are very apprehensive, anxiety bound with this new disease, to try to step back and say, and take a deep breath, and try to relax and calm and say, in today's modern world, this, as Dr. Leacock said, there's a lot of great medications out there now. And Mark told me that in my day, I got disability. Today, he said, I wouldn't get it. So MS is becoming more of a chronic disease that you just have to live with.
And I also wanted to touch upon the importance of stress management. I cannot overstate the importance of managing stress, because we see a lot of people get what we call pseudo relapses, which means you get old symptoms that come back from one of your relapses whenever you're stressed, whenever you're tired, not feeling well, not taking care of yourself. That doesn't mean that there's new nerve damage. It means that there's existing stress taking over the existing nerve damage. And if you remove those triggers, you go right back to where you are. So it's real important to, really manage your stress.
How much of stress management do you believe plays into your father's remission of symptoms for however long it's been?
So I do think it definitely played a big role, but also, I believe, he had some brainstem lesions, from what he was telling me, and that's a lot of real estate territory of all those nerves coming in, so you really don't get a lot of room to have lesions there. So the lesion can be more devastating there, but he's very fortunate that he didn't have that. So, I think it does come to sheer luck. That he had such a mild course, over 20 years. And you can't just say to someone, oh, yeah, you're going to have a mild course over 20 years. You can look at it retrospectively. And remember, we didn't have the high efficacy therapies that we had now back then. So back then, he was a rare case of having mild MS. But nowadays, with the treatment that we have, we could really manage MS as if they were mild MS.
David, if there was one word that you could encourage a newly diagnosed family to lock onto as their anchor word to help them come through this moment of time and navigate MS going forward, what would that word be?
The word would be exercise. Before Mark was a physician, I went to an old-time MS doctor, and he used to say, exercise, exercise, exercise. And now that I have a dog who loves to walk with me, I've been putting on my music, taking him into we have a nice forested trail in our neighborhood, and I put on my music and I walk her, and I'm walking anywhere from 2 to 6 miles a day, depending on how I feel, and of course dependent on the weather. But it has really helped my state of mind, like no other, that no mind-altering drug could ever do. But it's to exercise and take a walk with your dog in a forest, and it's made me much more physically fit. And when people ask me how I'm doing, I forget I have MS, and I will always say I'm great, I'm fine. The last time I had I've only had I believe 2 infusions over the 30 years, and I don't think I've had one in the last 15 to 20 years, but I don't remember that far back.
Dr. Leekhoff, can you explain to me in as simple terms as possible exactly what's going on with the nervous system with MS?
Sure. So MS occurs when your body's immune system, which is typically used to fight bacteria and viruses, just mistakenly thinks that your brain and your spinal cord are foreign and it doesn't belong, like the bacteria virus. So it sends the immune system, or I call the soldiers of the immune system, to start attacking the brain and the spinal cord and even the eyes. And if not caught early and not treated, it can lead to irreversible damage. But with the advent of giving them acute treatment with steroids and recognizing these symptoms early, we can actually reverse those symptoms. But steroids by itself does not, prevent relapses. So that's why we have medications, which we call disease-modifying therapies, to prevent relapses.
How have those therapies and treatments evolved since your dad was first diagnosed to today?
Sure. So, like we talked about the platform therapies and the injectables. Those right now we call them very modest efficacy therapies. And then we had Tysabri that came out in 2007, and then that was a very effective treatment, but there was always that risk for brain infection, where we call PML. And so we've pulled off the market for a couple of years and then came back on the market. And then we had oral therapies that came out, such as dimethyl fumarate, Tecfidera. That's a generic, and then that's the brand name. And then we had fingolimod and Gilenya, which are the generic and the brand name. And then since 2016, 2017, we've had the B cell therapies, which are really the mainstay. So we have Ocrevus, Briumvi, Kesimpta, and the B cell therapies were actually being used in treatment since 2004, but they were not FDA approved. And so that's how we got our first experience with the high efficacy therapies. And nowadays, because of the high efficacy therapies that we have, we're really putting a freeze to the MS and making sure that people don't get worse. So the trajectory of the MS is so different now than it was 20, 30 years ago.
Love to hear that. Mark, David, we talked a lot about your firsthand experience, and I asked you for a word as somebody who's diagnosed. I'm curious to know what you would tell the supporting system of the individual that's newly diagnosed, whether that's the immediate nuclear family, the extended family, people at work. What words do you have for them to help this individual who's newly diagnosed navigate going forward?
I would say that allow me to be independent, don't pity me, and we'll move on in a very positive environment. I don't think people should put their stress levels on the patient because it's the patient that will not benefit from other people's stresses, and to be calm and relaxed and be confident and positive what the medications with MS has done over the years.
Great. And Dr. Leikoff, when you have these varying degrees of MS, as I'm understanding through our time together so far, you have what you're sharing about your dad's a little bit more mild, and I imagine there's a wide spectrum here, and you have a little bit more aggressive forms. Is there anything we haven't talked about with regards to treatment strategies, support system,
Sure.
therapies for somebody that's a little bit more of a severe case?
Sure. So, back then, doctors used to put people on platform therapies and then they would escalate if someone had a relapse and just pray for the best. But, I'm part of an MS comprehensive care center where we really work with the patient and put them on the most efficacious treatment in what risk profile that they're willing to tolerate. And not just that, but we also look at symptomatic management. So, a lot of neurologists out there, they're not really comfortable with symptomatic management, and they'll often quarterback out these patients out to urology, behavioral health, and so many other specialties. But my MS Comprehensive Care Center, we really are well-versed in the symptomatic management. And so not only just treating the patients to prevent the MS, we can also treat their symptoms, and that can really optimize their quality of life. Because my philosophy is if these symptoms affect your quality of life, certainly we can do something about it. If they don't affect your quality of life, let's keep an eye on it, just because we don't want to necessarily give them 20, 30 medications that they don't need. And I always tell my patients, if you were my father in these shoes, I know my father has mild MS, but if he was in your shoes, I would treat him, like I would, I would treat you like I would want my father to be treated.
I'm trying to think back to the exact episode, but there was a previous episode of this podcast where I asked the doctor what they believe the most valuable question a patient could ask them when they're learning about a diagnosis for the first time. And they mentioned something very similar to what you just said, which is if I was your insert the blank son, daughter, child, father, how would you treat me? And so I think that's a really important note for anybody that's listening to this podcast, when whether it's MS or any other condition, is to really build trust and ask questions of your provider so that you do trust them and understand. And with a question so simple as that, right? It's like, Dr. Leekhoff, I know your dad has MS. Like, how would you help him navigate this?
So it's real important, and so patients never have to ask me that question because I bring up my father and almost every new diagnosis, and that really reassures the patients. The patients feel like they have a support team, and I always tell people I'm your biggest cheerleader in addition to your family and your loved ones, and we're going to get through this, and we're going to, navigate the MS so that you can be the best person that you can be.
Love that.
Mike, there are a lot of support groups for MS. The MS Society has a lot of programs, and it's they do know how to reach out. Personally, I just concentrated on reading more articles on the MS drugs through MedPage, and that built up my confidence. But there seems to be a lot of help for people who have questions, but I think it comes down to the same thing: is lower your stress levels, get exercise, and your MS will be there, but it will be secondary to your life. And don't make it. My message would be is you don't want to be defined by your disability of multiple sclerosis.
David, I feel as if every time you've shared today, there's elements coming out from your responses that really speak to your mindset that you've crafted since being diagnosed, which I just wanted to call out because I think it's so key. Regardless of the condition, MS or anything for that nature, your mindset and your hope and your belief and your confidence and on and on and on, clarity, all these things I think is crucial to managing and making this an actual lifestyle diagnosis for you now.
I agree. I think that's what ha has helped me be so successful navigating MS, that because I've de-stressed my life, I only look at the positive. I'm a positive person, look at the positive things in life, and I think that's really helped me. So stress is the number one problem in all of medicine. I think there are good genes and bad genes, and the bad genes mutate because of stress, and that's disease. But that's a very anecdotal statement I make. So, it's not supported by anything but my two cents.
Well, they're very wise words. And you just made me think of a few other one words to answer my question I asked you many moments ago. If you could give a family one word, one of them to throw on the table is gratitude, which I sense you have a lot of.
Gratitude, and it's nice to have support, people who get it, and people who aren't scared about it and run away from you because they think it's a contagious disease. MS is not a contagious disease. It's just one of those things that you pick up in life that you have to deal with. And that's how I've placed it in my brain.
Dr. Leekhoff, what are you most excited about in the next 5, 10, 15 years, specifically in developments with MS?
Sure. So, we have a lot of great therapies for relapsing MS, but for those people who were diagnosed decades ago and they're having progressive MS, we have therapies that are coming out where we call them the BTK inhibitors, which can help with progressive MS. And we're really excited about that, as well as options for remyelination. And that's the big one. People that have had damage we may be able to repair those damage in the future, and that would be a really exciting frontier in MS.
I remember I went to school for exercise science, so I vaguely remember some of the in the weeds science with MS, and I remember being taught that like let's imagine your nerve is like an electrical wire, and the myelin sheath is the protection around the wire. And with MS, the protective layer of the electrical wire is actually fraying off or coming off, which leads to some of these. I mean, this is a very like general
Sure.
image, but I guess is that accurate in terms of like the way you're thinking about it?
It is, multiple sclerosis is a demyelinating disease where myelin sheath gets removed, and I likened myelin as almost of a saran wrap that goes around and it helps the nerves to conduct faster, communicate with one another much better, and in MS. They're not transmitting electricity as fast, and so that's where people's deficits, whether it be numbness, weakness, cognitive issues, and everything that comes with MS gets affected. The thought is, if we have remyelination therapy, we could actually reverse the demyelination and really help them to gain some of that function back, including walking for those people who are already not able to walk.
That's incredible. Just to think that it's not just therapies for pain or treating the symptom of the root cause, but it's actually repairing the wire per se that we're talking about, which is really wild to think about that that's coming, potentially
Right.
coming.
And Mike, I think that you're going to be hearing more and more about MS because the Heisman Trophy winner of this year and the IU quarterback of the IU football team, Fernando Mendoza's mother has MS, and he's very big in fundraising with that, and his mother has been his whole reason for succeeding as quarterback. So I think you're going to hear a lot of more research and more money involved in MS to cure this disease.
Even more reason to root for him. What a great, he's a great guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Love to hear that. And Dr. Likoff, I'm sure, obviously it's potential and it's coming down the line, but it has to be exciting on the medical side and in your world specifically to know that there's awareness around this growing and growing as the days come.
Yeah, and almost everybody knows someone that has MS. I've never met one person that didn't know someone who was affected by MS, whether it be a friend of a friend or a family member. MS really does touch a lot of people around people.
David, any final words?
I thank my son for his good professionalism and leadership. He's the only person I know who, when you ask him what was your favorite course in college, he would say organic chemistry, because that's immunology and that's MS. So it's I'm flattered that he's so successful in what he's doing, and he's got a good record of helping people.
Love to hear that. And Dr. Likoff, same for you. Any final thoughts or words?
No, I just, have a really positive attitude, towards MS, not just as a doctor, but also as someone that has a loved one with multiple sclerosis. And for me, I've always been an advocate for myself, because I'm actually one of the very few doctors with a hearing loss. I'm actually the only deaf adult neurologist in the United States, and I've always told myself to be myself and not let my hearing loss define me, and that's how I'm able to translate that saying to my patients so they don't let their MS define themselves and they can be who they are.
David, once again, I see your mindset come through in your son as we wrap up this episode.
Well,
It's the same sentiment you've been sharing the whole
yeah,
time.
Mike, he's the only board certified neurologist in the world who was born deaf and has been successful. So he understands what it is to have a disability, and he understands the chemistry involved because his love of organic chemistry, which is all involved with the MS drugs. So it's been a blessing. So I'm very fortunate, and thank you for having me.
Thank you
Thank
for
you for
joining
having
us,
me.
David. Dr. Leacock, thank you so much for today's episode. If you want more information on MS specifically, please head over to theeducatedpatient.com. You can also find many other disease states, conditions, and lifestyle information on theeducatedpatient.com. Stay tuned for more episodes as we head into 2026. And once again, Dr. Leacock and David, thank you so much for today's episode.
Thank you.
Thank you.